for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
The latter first. I'm Nick Mandola. Very excited to be here on the Football Club of Buffalo Show. Ben Tsujimoto is here as well. These headphones are like ear pillows here. I'm in a comfort zone, and I'm ready to roll and talk about some soccer.
Mine are a little bit tougher, but they're purple, so I outstyle your headphones.
Yeah, you're the LA Lakers.
Mine are probably from the 1980s.
You got to get your own, man, Derek. You work here. You gotta get your own set.
You say work like I get paid.
Well, listen.
I have the Kobe Bryant headphones, though, so I mean that's...
You do.
The swan song.
They're going up for air balls?
Yeah, what an awful night he had. But in any event, he loves soccer, so there's your transition.
Bam.
Lots of stuff to do today. We're going to have Liam Callahan on, sweet home kid from Buffalo who is in the Elite Eight with Syracuse. They look fantastic, really hitting their stride at the right time. Two straight years with decent tournament runs. I'm excited to talk to him. He's played with KW United in the PDL as well as FC Buffalo before that in the NPSL. So lots of good stuff to get into with him. And look, every year when the brackets come out, you kind of circle the guys you know in the D3 tournament and the D2 tournament and the D1 tournament, and he's the last one left. So we're hinging our hopes on the Irish Wonder.
Well, he and Azana Kase as well. But I mean,
sure,
But Liam does play quite a bit more of a prominent role for his team as opposed to Azana at Akron. But
no, that's a great point. But Azana is kind of the chaos maker with 5 minutes left, and
yep.
I shouldn't have left him out there. Sorry, Azana.
I got your back, Azana.
Yes, he does. He has your back, soundly covered. But there's still so much to get to. MLS Cup playoffs hit the. We have our finalists now. Ben, you wanted to talk about, and obviously I'm always happy to talk about NPSL stuff with the Rochester River Dogs coming into the league next year and providing a ready-built rival, as you put, and rightfully so for FC Buffalo. But we're going to begin with the Premier League and a pretty exceptional story. Everybody's talking about it, and I will be the first one to mention that if we're going to talk about it, we should mention that Jamie Vardy, as inspiring as he is, did have a racist scandal before the season.
Naturally. I mean, you got to paint both sides of the guy, right?
At a casino. Yeah, I just think when someone does something exceptional, we tend to then kind of brush over it, and we certainly shouldn't do that. But
did you see his little mess up with David De Gea, where they were just kind of yelling very foul things back and forth to each other during that game?
No, but I will certainly look it up later.
Oh, my. I was trying to lip read, but I couldn't do it very well.
Well, maybe it was in Spanish. I'm sure Jamie Vardy is multilingual.
Undoubtedly.
In any event, to make that joke funny, if you don't know who Jamie Vardy is, he comes from the lower reaches of English soccer. A lot of people have the same sort of setup that in England that we have here. Obviously, much more celebrated academies, but you wind up in a pro system already when you're 8. David Beckham, I think, was signed when he was 6 or 7, and they'll move up and move up and move up and get better. Now, what happens is these smaller clubs, if you get in Manchester United when you're 8 and you last until you're 18, well, you pretty much have it ready made. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a career for the next 6 years somewhere as long as you don't murder someone. Guys like Jamie Vardy, and I can't remember what academy he was in, but it was a lower level academy to start with, and he ends up with Stocksbridge Park Seals getting paid, as they say, a couple hundred quid a week. Don't even know what that means. Goes to Fleetwood Town. Halifax Town, I believe, is one of the... And somehow makes his way just... Well, somehow. He scored a ton of goals in what we call non-league football, which is not that far off from the BDSL around here.
Yeah.
I mean, it on a relative level, the top reaches of the BDSL, that's what we're talking about here, except slightly paid to represent a bar that's been around for 300 years.
You know, they showed that timeline. I saw it on Twitter today of Jamie Vardy being a factory worker in 2005. And then they showed just a very brief progression of over time. And like you said, Halifax Town and all these others. And then it's just like, bam, Premier League leading scorer, most goals. You know, I mean, longest streak in terms of goals ever, passing Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Yeah, so he enters the day against Manchester United, which I think ups the drama a little bit too. I mean, Ruud van Nistelrooy had said, obviously a Manchester United legend, I hope he breaks my record. And he comes out there and scores rather quickly.
Yes.
And Leicester is just going into bedlam because you have the added story, which is essentially, what if the Buffalo Bisons were in first place trying to win the National League pennant or the American League pennant? I mean, Leicester is coming into that game in first place in the entire Premier League, where after I believe it was the same amount of games last year, they were dead last. So just an incredible story, and he scores and he goes bananas. And my favorite moment is what he says. And we don't generally like this when athletes do this, call out themselves and talk about how amazing they are. But he is screaming, me, he's pounding his chest and saying, me, bleeping me. And, you know, if it's Kobe Bryant or Tom Brady doing that, you're thinking, well, let's cool out a little. Yeah. But it's almost like Jamie Vardy was saying, do you believe this bleep? Like, do you believe what is going on here? Me, bleeping me. Like, and so I can't help even knowing that he had a horrible interaction at a casino. Mm-hmm. That this guy is living the dream. I mean, this guy is a story for all of England. He's being talked up. Will Chelsea buy him? Will Manchester City buy him? What's the next step for a guy who in 2012 signed his first real Football League deal? And that's amazing. I mean, what's the equivalent? Poof. In American sports, Tony Danza, the field goal kicking, garbage picking Philadelphia phenomenon?
I think of Chris Winkie, you know, the Florida State quarterback who gets drafted when he's, 30, right, or something like that?
Yeah.
And comes in and just is kind of shocking.
Because he had been a minor league baseball player before that. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is, that's a really good toss out there. I can't really think of a basketball that doesn't lend itself to that.
Yeah,
neither.
I would point, I think, to NBA guys who come over from overseas.
Sure.
And they're 26, 27. You don't really know what you're going to get with them. How old was Dirk when he came over? I guess he was still in his pretty young 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time that those leagues overseas are celebrated in their own right, at least regionally.
Yeah.
So maybe that's your local. I mean, Jeremy Lin maybe is an interesting comparison there. But the question I have, and I think it's kind of interesting. Story comes out today, The Goal Movies, which you'll remember, starring Kuno Becker. And it was made about, if you don't remember, a kid from, was he from California?
I think so.
He was American for sure. Mm-hmm. And he ends up coming over and playing for Newcastle United. He's discovered. And then eventually, did he go to Real Madrid? I only saw the first movie.
I think so. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. So the guy who pitched those movies, a showrunner, a scriptwriter, is in Hollywood apparently this week, according to the publications over in England, and pitching the Jamie Vardy movie. And he's pitching Zac Efron, Andrew Garfield, who's Spider-Man right now, and I think a very good Spider-Man, as long as we're throwing it out there, and someone else. I can pull up the answer online while we're talking here, to be in the Jamie Vardy story. So my question to you off the top of your head, is there someone you think needs to be in that movie playing a particular role, or is there someone that needs to be playing Jamie Vardy? That's my question. It doesn't have to be someone with a questionable checkered past, but perhaps that could work for you. Is there anybody that pops up at the top of your head? And I will give you my answer because I've had more time to think about it, because that's
you've thought about it all day.
It's the brilliance of coming up with a question is you get to come up with the answer. But is there anybody that pops in your head?
Well, you know, though, I have been thinking about just Premier League movies, and I know this won't directly answer your question, but do you think that Jack Nicholson would play a very good Big Sam?
Jack Nicholson could play a Big Sam. He'd have to. He's cocky enough. I think he'd have to gain a lot of weight. I thought of Jack Nicholson as a possible role for old Leicester boss Nigel Pearson.
Mm.
But here's what I had in the story, because we put this up. I work for Pro Soccer Talk at NBC Sports, and I thought Aaron Paul. You familiar with him? The kid from Breaking Bad. He became kind of famous as a Jamie Vardy. I had James Franco as Riyad Mahrez. Tommy Lee Jones as Claudio Ranieri. Liam Neeson as Nigel Pearson. Ryan Gosling as Casper Schmeichel. And Danny Drinkwater as himself. That was my setup there. But I started to think you could go even further with this. Your Jose Mourinho is like, who plays Jose Mourinho in a movie? Who plays Sir Alex Ferguson? And you made that comparison yourself. It's easy to pick out who plays Beckham, right? Which handsome Hollywood star gets to pretend he doesn't have a super attractive woman and live in the life of luxury.
You know what I just realized too? There's just a stunning resemblance between Jose Mourinho and Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. Yeah. Yeah, there's something about
just
that.
Just physical resemblance. Maybe not personality.
I would like to see it as more of one of those Broadway plays where he doesn't do the accent. You know, you see him in the movies before and he's just like, I knew I couldn't do Mourinho's accent because it's just too famous of an accent. So I just tried to take on the role. So instead, De Niro's just doing himself as Mourinho, right? I don't care that he threw the bib at me, you know? But there are a lot of terrific stories that could go along with it. But let's toss this out there right now, Ben. And that's Leicester still tied for first on points, level on points with Manchester City. Claudio Ranieri says, famously, we're just still trying to get to 40 points. We're not really looking at the table, which is absurd. They're all looking at the table, but they're just trying to get those 11 points that generally mean you won't get relegated. What do you think is a reasonable high-end goal for them? And you can, the answer can be championship, of course. Not the English championship, but the number one seed, if you will. What do you think?
I think they end up in that the play-in spot for the Champions League. I think they end up, I think fifth is probably their best bet. You know, I think 6 to 10 is more realistic. They can't perform at this level the whole year. You know, I mean, especially some of these smaller clubs run into a difficult patch. They're not as deep as a lot of the bigger clubs.
Right. They would need to insulate themselves because they're not exactly throwing up shutouts recently. Right. They did against Newcastle, but everybody does, except Norwich.
You sound bitter about that.
Yeah, I hate my team. I am open to trading in teams. I've been watching Bournemouth with wonder since I famously ran into their chairman, and he gave me a pin. So I'm like, well, I'm already got some of the gear. No, I hate Newcastle, and we can talk about when you should be allowed to quit your club, especially when it's not your local club.
Oof.
I've rooted for them since completely legally drinking Newcastle beer and thinking, oh, I'll root for them earlier in my life. Uh-huh. So at what point can you just say, wow, this is a horribly backwards run organization that continually embarrasses you and sells your favorite players at the risk of its safety? When can you just bail? I wouldn't be bailing for, well, first of all, my favorite team is FC Buffalo, but I wouldn't be bailing for Arsenal or Manchester United or Manchester City. I would be bailing for a club that I eventually found a kinship with.
Well, Nick, let's look at the other teams that you like. You're a Chicago Cubs fan, right?
Yep.
That goes a long way. I feel like
there's a real kinship between all but one of my favorite teams.
Mm-hmm. And the Boston Celtics is another.
The Celtics is the one that is the outlier.
Okay.
And the Cubs could be an outlier. They have the money, and they're going to be very good next year.
Yeah, they're going to be very good next year. But there's a lot of suffering, from what it sounds like, for a couple of your clubs.
Producer Derek, I will share the story with you before we get back to the Leicester point. So I was obviously a Bills and a Sabres fan girl. Well, not obviously, but most people around here tend to gravitate to their local teams. And those are obviously underdog stories with some dicey pasts. And then I became a fan of the Cubs, which coincidentally had the same history. Thank goodness for Larry Bird. I had a little bit of a championship medal on my resume. But I picked Newcastle because of a run-in with their beer. And I go online a few years later after already rooting for them. And I Google, what's the history of Newcastle? Let me read a book on Newcastle. And the title of the biography is 50 Years of Hurt.
That sounds pretty accurate.
So we're living in a world of consistency. But back to Leicester. Yeah, they do seem to have that sort of Southampton-Everton vibe where their goals should be 6 through 10. And not their goals should be, but they can be there. They would need to fill in their back line, I still think. As much as Wes Morgan is having a good time of it, and there are some players who are playing admirably, I don't see a Kurt Zouma there. I don't see a Chris Smalling.
And I think their offense is almost too reliant on Jamie Vardy. And I know Riyad Mahrez is
fantastic.
Riyad Mahrez has had a very good year, but beyond that, if Jamie Vardy pulls a hamstring and is out for a month,
you're in trouble.
How do you really think Leicester's going to do? Do you think Leicester will get, you know, like 1 or 2 points from 4 games? Like, I think Vardy makes that big of a difference there.
He is, because he's relentless, and he is almost a lesson for the players out there who we've all seen forwards of our favorite team, whether it be on a local level or higher up, that don't press or they don't have enough energy. And his fitness is unbelievable.
It is, yeah.
He presses every ball. He is constantly looking when his team gets the ball, when Mahrez gets the ball on the wing, you will see him. It's almost like another gear checks into him.
Yeah.
And he starts thinking, when is the time to make that great run? And, you know, they have Leonardo Ulloa. I always say it wrong because it's two L's.
I know.
Rick Jenneret would have a field day with it, I'm sure. Aloha. But and then Shinji Yokozaki, they've started to spend after last year. But you're right. For me, I'm still not at the point where, if you asked me, is there a better chance of Leicester finishing in the top four or Chelsea making up the 14 points there behind Leicester? I would bet on Chelsea. I know that sounds crazy, but especially if Chelsea ends up getting knocked out of Europe, I would think they'll make up those points on a Leicester. So for me, I think they've got to aim for hoping that the Champions League or the Europa League spots are a little lower. Because for a club like them, you have to, as much as people make fun of Europa League, for a club like that, it has to be an aim. Because what an experience. I realized that in the early 2000s, they were pretty high up there with Gary Lineker. But this is, or not Gary, yeah, Gary Lineker. This is time for them to make something happen.
Before we get to Liam Callahan, the Syracuse University guest, I want to ask you, Nick, I don't think Jamie Vardy's going to stay at Leicester much longer. You know, he's going to cash in. Leicester's going to cash in.
He's 28 years old. They should cash in.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you think he goes?
You know what? I would like to see him in a system that isn't relying on one striker. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him running off somebody else. I almost think of him as the sort of guy you'd want running off Clint Dempsey. You know, in that perfect Spurs team from a few years ago, to have Dempsey and Vardy up top working alongside each other, because the relentless motors, there's a comparison there. So while I'd love to see him at Chelsea, because I don't want to see him in a single striker system. He could be a poacher of the highest magnitude, don't get me wrong, but I'd like to see him at Spurs. I'd like to see him running off of Harry Kane. I don't know if he functions as a wing guy, but to have, I always say his name wrong, but Son.
I just call him Son.
Son.
And that's what is.
And,
yeah,
and you've got the.
I do.
You should have every right to say that, Ben Tsujimoto.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see him at Spurs, but I don't know that they budge for that. And they certainly need a striker. Where would you like to see him?
I can see him at Liverpool, honestly.
He is a Liverpool buy.
And he is, because Daniel Sturridge, you know, is beginning to wear out his welcome because he's constantly hurt.
Danny Ings is also hurt there.
Danny Ings is hurt. I think Divock Origi just really hasn't gotten, you know, a ton of chances yet. I think Jamie Vardy plays Jurgen Klopp's style. He's a high-pressure guy. He just works and presses and presses, just as you said earlier. And I think that fits exactly into what Klopp wants to do. And I think
He work with Benteke is kind of the question. Because Vardy becomes, and I'm combining Klopp's plans here, but he becomes the Aubameyang to someone's Lewandowski.
Yeah.
So can he be that guy?
I don't know. I'm not as sold as you are as about Vardy being a complementary striker rather than a single striker. I think single strikers can cause all sorts of havoc, even if they're the Vardy kind of build. You know, they don't have to be a Jose Altidore.
Well, Firmino did it for Liverpool a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, the false nine is becoming more and more trendy.
I think, there's an interesting question as to whether or not we'll see the rebirth of the 4-4-2. Not the rebirth, not that it ever went away, but it would be interesting to see and dissect as these teams are growing up in academies that are top-down, teaching you to play in more of a 4-5-1 system. What happens when someone flips the script and develops players to play in a 4-4-2 against that 4-5-1? Because you do sacrifice in the midfield, but now these people are kind of growing up as center backs who have dealt with one forward, and all of a sudden, at least for a brief period of time, to have two maniacal strikers around there is interesting. Speaking of someone who can give us the background on defense, we are now going to welcome in a man who's in the Elite Eight, which is very exciting. I don't think we called that in college soccer because we're not allowed to. But Liam Callahan, he's a Buffalo boy, and what I love about Liam is he's very proud of that. He wears it on his sleeve, and he's at Syracuse University, and they're still alive for an NCAA championship. And in fact, if you look at the bracket, you can really draw them up as doing as much as they want to do. And Liam, I'm sure you'll tell me, you honestly would like to win the whole thing.
Absolutely. How's it going, guys?
Really well, man. Congratulations on everything. I think it was kind of, you knew at Syracuse, as talented as you guys were last year and almost, you know, rated professionally because there was so much talent on your team, you knew that it would take some time to adjust, but once you guys did adjust and looking at what you've done since then, do you feel like once you just found your feet with this new batch of players, it was just like old times? Do you feel the same sort of fluidity that you felt last year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you always worry about the next year when you lose so many guys, as we did the following year. And bringing in new guys, just figuring out, you know, finding your feet, like you said. I think we have three freshmen that play pretty much majority of the time and a couple of new guys that transferred in. So it was just finding that balance between, you know, the older guys and the new guys and trying to help them out as far as transitioning over to college. And, you know, the new guys did a great job of doing that. And I think, you know, it was in the ACCs, in the championship when we kind of just figured out, you know, that they were a really good team and that, and we, you know, every team we're going to play is going to have a problem with us.
Liam, Ben Tsujimoto here. I want to talk about the 3-1 win over Seattle to put you guys into this Elite Eight. I saw your name as contributing, you know, the two assists of the first two goals that put you guys in the driver's seat of that game. How did Seattle, I guess, allow you to have so much room and just to be able to operate on the left side like that? What gave you so much freedom and so much joy in there?
We actually played more of a winger, or at least I played more of as a winger rather than a wingback, so I was able to get up forward a lot more. But, no, it was just our team just, you know, the way we play is we high-press every team we play against just so they can't play out or anything like that. Almost kind of like a Barcelona way where, you know, as soon as a team wins it, we try and win it back. But, you know, it was just a matter of us winning the ball back and putting so much pressure on that team that they really didn't know what was coming. And, you know, as soon as it happened, you could tell that the team had no idea that it was coming. Seattle was a great team, but, I mean, they never played a team like us throughout the year. So it was pretty obvious throughout the game that they had not played a team of our caliber, and it showed throughout the game. So,
well, Liam, what I kind of appreciate about what Syracuse has done over the past couple of years, and I don't know if you want to directly tie this to yourself, but I was going to tie it to your coach. You guys play with a swagger, and I know that's an overused term in athletics, but there's a confidence about you that given the Syracuse program and how far you guys have come in recent years, there's an expectation there. And so even when maybe the start to the season wasn't what you guys wanted, you still felt like it could come together because of Syracuse. Is that something that Coach McIntyre has bred into it, or do you think it started with the players and maybe has filtered through the organization? Because Syracuse traditionally, you know, went through a bit of a dry spell, and you guys are absolutely humming now.
Definitely. I mean, it's definitely a big part of Mac. You know, he's a great coach. He's very intelligent, and he's definitely a very big part of why we're doing so well this year and even the following years. But, you know, we talked about it with some of the older guys that graduated. And, you know, it's kind of a building foundation. It started, you know, when Mac first got here, you know, they only had, I think, 3 wins in the season. And then they progressively, you know, made their way up each year. So it's a mixture between the players and the coach, of course. You know, mostly the guys I like to think are the ones that started like 3 years ago when they only had 3 wins. Like, you know how tough that is to just go through a season and not be able to get more than 3 wins. I couldn't even imagine. But, no, Max definitely, you know, he's played a big role. You know, in the beginning of the season, we had a tough time, maybe didn't get the results we wanted, but it's just, like you said, kind of giving us that swagger and that confidence that we needed to go throughout the year. And it shows, you know, as you can see from now on.
Liam, how much trust does Coach Mac put in you in terms of being a captain with guys like Kamal Miller and Miles Robinson, the two of the players who are freshmen who scored against Seattle? How much, I guess, freedom and responsibility has he given you in bringing along these new defenders who are asked to play 90 minutes?
That was a big question at the beginning of the season was, you know, how would Miles and Kamal be? Responsibility-wise, I mean, Mac obviously leaves a lot up to the captains, not just me, but Yusho and Ivan as well. You know, he asks a lot out of us to make decisions for the team without the coaches having input on it. And, I mean, he kind of just wanted us to kind of help them acclimate to that level of college play because it's so different. I know for myself, when I came from academy and came to college, you know, you got guys out there who are 2-3 years older than you. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. But, you know, Kamal and Miles, they've had a great season. You know, I was pretty surprised on how quickly they adapted to the game. Liam, and, you know, I haven't had to do much to help them with that.
Yeah, Liam, there's a challenge inherent going back to last season where you're watching, I'm sure, your teammates like Emil get literally as good a gig as you're going to get coming out of college soccer. You're seeing Alex Bono get drafted, et cetera. How much of it is you knowing that you're a bit of a competitor? Were you a bit of, were you kind of excited to have the opportunity to maybe make a further stamp on it as a leader, as being one of the older guys? Was that something that excited you, or did you view it more of a challenge?
A little bit of both. You know, when you get named as a captain, it's a big responsibility. And the season we've had this year is not one that I expected, to be completely honest. We've made history twice in Syracuse. You know, no team has ever won ACC championship, and no team's ever made it to the Final Eight. So, I mean, it's not just me, though. This team is just, it's a solid team. You got so much depth. You have the guys that practice and challenge the starters every day. You got the home crowd who comes to every game, you know, when it's 30 degrees outside or it's raining. It's just a great environment to be in. And, you know, when it all comes together like that, you just see how smoothly it goes.
Your next opponent is actually the last team to beat you. You play Boston College in this Elite Eight. Looking back at when you played Boston College last time, I saw it was a 2-1 result, but you outshot them in the second half, 16-1. What do you remember from that match, and what, I guess, did you learn from that match that you can apply coming up in this next match?
Yeah, we came out pretty flat in the first half, and it showed. They went up, I think, 2-0 on us in the first half, and we went into halftime, and, you know, we said to ourselves, like, it's time to pick it up. And in the second half, I think we came out and played, if not our best half of soccer in the whole year. And, you know, like you said, we outshot them. Thought we could have had a couple goals on them and came back, but we were unlucky. But I think what we learned from that mostly is just that, you know, we have to start every game full speed, because, you know, at this stage in the championship and in the playoffs, you know, it's win or lose. So, you know, Boston College is a great team. I think it's a great matchup for us, and we're looking forward to it.
Liam, obviously you had a tremendous amount of success back home in our area here. And I was thinking about it with the, you know, the All-Western New York High School dinner we have coming up, which I know you'll have some relatives there. Last year we had Jake Reno speak, and he talked about how life takes different directions for soccer. He was recruited somewhere. I know you know Jake, but he was recruited somewhere at a high D1 level, and a coaching change happens, and something happens with his scholarship, and he ends up at Cornell, where he ends up going to a tournament. You had a similar situation. I'm sure when you went to Villanova, which is a giant school in its own right, you had visions for it. Now you end up at Syracuse, which is another jewel. Things don't go as planned. What sort of advice would you give to young players, given your story and what you've learned from other players at your level?
Yeah, I mean, my story, I think, is I guess, one to learn from. You know, I chose Villanova mostly because of the scholarship I was offered. I like the school. I like the coach. And you know, I still have a relationship with the players on the team. But you really got to find a school that you find yourself comfortable at. You know, a lot of people told me, you know, going into that process was to find a school. If, you know, you ever got hurt or something went wrong with soccer, you'd enjoy being at just for school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, stuff didn't exactly go my way at Nova. You know, I felt like it was time for a change. And big thank you to my parents for helping me out with moving to Syracuse. But, I mean, it couldn't have been any better. Going from a team that had problems making it out of their conference to a Sweet 16 my first year. I mean, it just shows that, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, if you make choices, you know, there's always an outcome to them. And, you know, sometimes they may not be good, but for my side, it happened to be good. So.
Yeah, but Liam, you know, to double down on that, I think it goes to show you how important the support structure is. And I'm not just saying this because of, you know, I know your mom and she's very involved in soccer as it is. But if you don't have the right people pointing in the right direction, and, you know, it's probably easy for someone given. I mean, that's probably your first time away from home, obviously. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's such a support structure in soccer that gets people to the level that you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I actually, the big reason I was able to transfer was because of, you know, the people I knew growing up that helped me, you know, get in contact with Syracuse, Alex Bono, who is, you know, playing professional right now, my best friend playing with growing up, he joked around with me a lot in the beginning of my years in college, saying, you know, you should transfer. And we always, you know, texted back and forth joking around about it. But then, you know, finally came a time where I said, you know, I think it's time to take this serious. And, you know, Yuka, the assistant coach for us, helped me with academy growing up. He was a big part of me transferring as well. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's just a lot of a support structure and just people all around that help you out in that situation.
Well, Liam, you got yourself, and we appreciate you being so generous with your time. You got yourself a club championship this summer. We loved seeing you at FC Buffalo, and we're also having a great time rooting for you right now, and we hope Syracuse brings home a national championship. I'm sure you're very much aware of it, but anybody who brings Buffalo with them obviously has Buffalo rooting for them as well. So, you know, we wish you the best of luck, and we can't wait to see how it all goes down for you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Liam Callahan from Syracuse. The men's soccer program is in the Elite Eight. They have Boston College next. And, you know, soccer sometimes takes that sort of storybook path. They were either going to get Georgetown, who had knocked them out of the tournament, even though I thought they were maybe the better team a couple times, mm-hmm. or they were going to get a Boston College, which, as you mentioned, was the last team to beat them. So we'll be watching that. Is it Saturday or Sunday?
I think it's Saturday.
We'll have to look. We'll let people know. On the other end of the break, we'll go to the internet and pretend we just figured it out. So for Ben Tsujimoto, I'm Nick Mendola, Derek Kramer producing. It's the Football Club of Buffalo show, and we'll be back in a moment. We're going to talk a little bit of NPSL and a new team coming up right in our region, so to speak, as well as the MLS Cup playoffs here on WBNY. It's the Football Club of Buffalo show. Nick Mendola here with Ben Tsujimoto. Ben, we should mention, because I don't think we did in the first part, that you have the Buffalo News soccer blog, BN_soccer on Twitter. And is it soccer.buffalonews.com?
It is.
Look
very,
at that.
Very simple, yeah.
I have an
you
excellent
may have visited
memory.
Once. Yeah.
Excellent memory. I've been there a lot. It's it's a lot of fun to read, and the Twitter account's a good follow as well. Speaking of that, one of the things you tweeted about is our next topic. We'll get to the MLS playoffs in a bit, but you had some questions that I might be
B-plus transition there.
Yeah, I might be very equipped to answer these questions.
Yeah, the news you're alluding to is the Rochester River Dogs were announced today as the newest NPSL team for the Midwest region, and that's Rochester, New York, not Rochester, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a built-in rival, and that's something that we mentioned in the beginning. And looking back, you see FC Buffalo has had a lot of players from Rochester through the year, so it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out in terms of trying to get players from the same territory. But I'm interested in knowing what your reaction is. What does the addition of Rochester mean for FC Buffalo and for the region at large? Is this something that FC Buffalo can view as a good thing, view as a challenge? There's got to be pros and cons to this. I'm interested from the organization standpoint what you think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we welcome, you know, for those of you who don't know, I'm the president, so to speak, of FC Buffalo. And I think it's great to have, for one thing, it's a cheap road trip for two teams. So, mm-hmm. You know, for Erie and Buffalo, which have long been the outposts, we've already had, you know, conference meetings where people realize that Rochester is now the outpost. It's a little bit further away. And so it's going to put a nice little bow on a quick trip. You know, it gives us an opportunity with a congested schedule, and which we're going to be working on next week in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We may have a game on a Wednesday now because you just got to jump out to Rochester. So those sort of things are nice. It's something that we see a lot in the Michigan area. I think there's a challenge in getting the best players. I also think that 5 years ago, and this is a credit to Buffalo soccer, 5 years ago, this is a scary topic for us. And that's not just because we have a very good relationship with the Rochester Rhinos now, but 5 years ago, Buffalo soccer wasn't producing the players, hometown-based players, mm-hmm. that we saw over in Rochester. I mean, we had Ian Mort, who instantly became one of our better scorers at FC Buffalo. He went to school in Central New York, but is from Rochester.
Yeah, Josh Faga, Christian Witkowski.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those players, Mike Reedy, yeah. That would have been a nightmare for us because mm-hmm. it was a big pull for us to get them in the first place. Now, I think at least for the first year, there's a bit of an unknown over there that I think probably helps Buffalo, but that's also a scary part. You know, if somebody knows what they're doing, and these guys who run the Rochester River Dogs, and I would want to not point out that the dogs ends in a Z.
Capital Z.
A capital Z.
Mm-hmm.
And I...
Dogs.
The dogs. And when I look at them and I think about what might they be able to do, what I'm excited about is I think they should be a gritty. I think they should be along more the Erie Admirals line because they're run by guys who run the top teams in the RDSL. Uh-huh. So I think you'll see a veteran team. Some of the better players out there, maybe they make a run at, you know, will they try and get a guy like Matthew Tucker from George Mason? You know, what are they going to do? Where will they build their relationships? Because the one thing we have here in Buffalo is a very close relationship with four Division I programs in terms of proximity.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be able to snare those players who are coming back from school? And who will we lose is an interesting question.
Yeah.
What players that from our past that maybe have kind of drifted into the periphery, well, now that they're back home in Rochester, maybe they're going to pull their boots out of the closet.
One thing that's interesting, too, is the ability for FC Buffalo to house players now allows you to really, the scope of being able to recruit is, you know, unlimited. You know, mm-hmm. you bring in three guys from Marist last year, as an example. Being able to house guys over the summer has to be an advantage and is it maybe another reason why you don't have to worry so much about the Reedy, Fagas, and Witkowski's going to Rochester if this were 2011. Or
well, yeah, maybe you hope that your reputation precedes you at least for a year, that, mm-hmm. that we're the club that's been around. But I think we're at a point now with as many college programs in the development of American and Canadian soccer, because being so close to the border, it's a natural draw. And there are still so many British, German, and Italian kids coming over that, frankly, don't want to spend the money to go back home for the summer. So the level in our league is so high, and it'll be very interesting to see. A team can't enter our league without you thinking, what if they get the best? If you don't operate that way, what if Rochester gets the best players from Rochester? What if they do what we're doing? And that's why we go into every offseason with almost a sense of paranoia, which is, if people do what we've done already, don't even think that way. What if people take it to the next step? What if people develop those relationships with gigantic schools? What's the first school that, think about it this way. Pick any team in our conference who's traditionally maybe hasn't had a lot of success. Go Cincinnati, who certainly haven't lived up to their expectations.
I was going to say Zanesville, but they don't exist.
Sure, but even a Zanesville.
Yeah.
All it takes for Zanesville to be an instant competitor for the crown is to have somebody from Zanesville or someone they know get hired as the top assistant at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to be prepared for that possibility. The Indiana Fire, who were already a very good team, are now essentially the Indy 11's B team from the NASL. So in my mind, when we're recruiting players, my thought is I have to assume that they're going to be as good as the New York Cosmos B team is. So we have to up our game.
And you have to up your game even more because there's a lot more MLS affiliations popping up.
Sure.
And that's very attractive to players who want to stay, is because they see, oh, this is tied to the Chicago Fire, or oh, this is tied to the New York Red Bull or something like that. I feel like it's even harder to compete now recruiting players when you have a Portland Timbers U23 or a Seattle Sounders U23 or, you know, name an MLS club's youth academy.
Sure, and you had mentioned Dezana Kasey earlier, someone who I think almost everyone was 99% sure, despite the fact that he was going to Akron, he'd be coming back to Buffalo. And I want to include Dezana in that as well. But mm-hmm. the Akron connection, he ends up, I believe he's out with Timbers PDL last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I think the MLS connection is interesting because the caliber of players that we're now going after, because we're not chasing the parity spot that if we get a couple bounces, we win. We're chasing the sort of players that, in theory, help us be the favorite in every game we play, mm-hmm. Especially at home. And the guys we're running into we're having to convince their coaches, even when we've convinced them, well, I've got a connection at MLS Academy, so my player is going to be able to train with New England Revolution, right? And so how do you compete with that? We have to say, look, we have a really good relationship with the Rhinos as well, but mm-hmm. you're going to go play in a great conference, and we're going to give you a solid experience, and you're going to be the focus. You're going to be a star here. So it's very interesting how often the caliber of players we're going at, whereas we were competing against maybe the local PDL side from where their home is from, or the local NPSL side from where their home is from. We're now hearing, well, I got to wait till I hear back from Columbus Crew. I've got to wait till I hear back from Orlando City FC, which is fun because that's the caliber of player that is interested in coming to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing and a curse.
talking rivalry now. It's a natural geographic rivalry, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a great soccer rivalry. Mm-hmm. And right now, FC Buffalo already has a very strong, passionate, established rivalry with Erie. It's probably no big issue to have two pretty serious rivals, right?
Like, no, I'll take them all.
You'll take them all.
Yeah. I'll take. I mean, for me, I want my schedule to look like 14 games, 15 games, whatever it is, and there's no possible chance that there's any sort of entertainment value. I think with respect to some of the teams in our league, and I'll use a team that doesn't exist anymore, but when we were coming into this league and we had a home game coming up on Sunday, and it was against the TSD Maryland Red Devils, I mean, what does that say to people? It says there's somebody coming from Maryland and this game counts. Whereas now I think the league has done a good job in making sure that when teams enter, they brand themselves with that area that's gonna be a draw. Mm. You know, Erie is our rival, but Rochester, Detroit, Dayton maybe these are cities that are on the map for soccer. Cleveland, Indianapolis. These are interesting cities to come. Mm-hmm.
And the crest of the Rochester River Dogs has four dogs. I think either four or five dogs.
I think it's five dogs.
Five dogs, yes.
Dogs.
Pouncing dogs, yeah. Well, thank you.
If there was only one dog, that would be a real problem because of the plural.
I don't know the origin of the River Dogs, and I looked it up a little bit. There's a bunch of River Dogs teams out there, but I don't really know anything about it. Do you have any background to that?
I don't. I just think every region has their own mentality and their own makeup, and you know, you don't judge them till you see it, and you get the feeling behind it. I just hope Rochester backs that team because I know our fans are going to travel, and that's an awesome feeling to know that a game's going to happen in Rochester and Buffalo's going to come marching in. In terms of the River Dogs, you know, I'm just not sure what to expect. I know there's no way a team from Rochester is going to be bad. Mm-hmm. So that's the good sign. You can't possibly overlook the amount of talent that is over there. But in terms of their crest, yeah, I think it fits in with Rochester in some way. You know, the Detroit fans always give us garbage because there are stars on our crest. You know, we're supposed to have stars in their championship. We always shoot back, yeah, it's on our flag and it's cool. So that's certainly a challenge. But yeah, I love the fact that Rochester's going to be in our league now that it's happened. I think while the process was going on, you're thinking in the background, well, if this doesn't happen, cool. But if it does, it forces you to play up. And an interesting side note, their head coach,
Matt Tantalo.
I've never met him, but what I do know is he coached our assistant coach Bob Roach in college.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, certainly there's going to be an inspiration there on perhaps both ends and a built-in rivalry, and it's going to be fun. It'll be most fun for me when we see what players that we have connections to end up in Rochester, and I suspect, like any team, which we saw with Erie in the past couple of years, you'll end up with some players who are going to end up on another team because one team didn't want them. Mm-hmm. And that ups the ante.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and you saw Jared Ott and Ryan Arvin and guys like that who were playing for Erie that had, you know, a little extra bone to pick. And you could tell just by the energy and the aggression that they played with that they're playing against a lot of people they know. They're playing against what they perceive as a rival, and it means a little bit more to them. So I think that's definitely an advantage with Rochester coming into the scene, is you'll have these players who know each other who do not want to lose to the other players.
Sure, and I just think about, just in my mind, going through one team's roster, and UB has Isaiah Mineta, who's from Rochester.
Yeah.
Ryan Aspenlighter is from Rochester. So will we have those sort of local connections of guys who are to me, what I really like about it, what it boils down to, is there will be a sort of breakdown of allegiances. You know, a guy we've had over our history who I love and hopefully is healthy again, missed the second half of our season with injuries, Derek Mayer. Mm-hmm. And a guy who just loves conceptually representing his city. Like, that's a big part of the draw for him. Mm-hmm. So to go up against people that maybe he went to college with who have had to play out here at a Division I level to get to Canisius, but then go home and get to put on for Rochester, so to speak. I think you can't get enough of that. More interesting to me, and we'll get to MLS in a minute, but more interesting to me in a topic down the road is how's the breakdown going to happen in Michigan? Because there's so many teams now, and they're all being in the league, and nothing to divide them. Does that detract from a Detroit? Does it detract from a Lansing? Lansing's coach goes to Ann Arbor.
Yeah, Ann Arbor.
Is Ann Arbor going to get those Michigan people that maybe Detroit wasn't getting because their coach is a Michigan State guy? Oof. How it breaks down is going to be really, really interesting out west.
And that's going to be really fun for those Michigan soccer fans, too, I think. I think the product is, well, maybe a little bit diluted because there's so many teams. I think those games are going to be more fierce than ever, you know? As it is, Lansing-Detroit City games are, you know, high-end Division I level soccer in my mind, and I just think it'll get better. Detroit City going to Hamtramck, a much bigger stadium. Will they be able to create the same energy and the same atmosphere that they did at Cass Tech? It was easier at Cass Tech, I think, just because the confines were so close and you were right on top of the field. Can they make that jump to a bigger stadium and really be able to create that same thing?
It's super interesting because I'll be looking at them. They're going to realize what I think we've realized at UB over the years is UB has a decent fan base for their early season soccer games before it gets cold, which is what we all run into in all sports in Buffalo, from the Bills up on down.
Oh, yeah.
And UB football games, which has had traditionally, they'll have a big student crowd come out and you'll be like, wow, this is a great crowd. But this gigantic stadium is, but I think Detroit will come through.
Yeah, that's,
I think they have too much pride that if the first game doesn't go the way they want to, that them and all of their friends, even if they have to bring like robot mannequins to sing with them, that place will be full. So it's gonna be a jewel for our league. Although Chattanooga is obviously there right now.
Yeah.
So moving on to Chattanooga, which was in the news because Don Garber threw a pot shot at it.
Yes.
Look at me bringing transition.
What a segue.
A needless shot from Don Garber, and he's since apologized for it. But we look at an MLS Cup playoffs, and this is the hardest thing for me to say because I generally don't really like the way the guy has represented himself, and he blew an Olympics for me. But Caleb Porter, what a job he did at Portland down the stretch.
Oh, yeah.
As let's go to the games real quick, and then I've got a big overarching MLS question for you. What did you make of that Portland-Dallas game? And once Dallas started making that comeback, were you rooting for it to be completed or for Portland to hang on?
I like Dallas. Dallas is a young team. They're easy to root for. The fact that they were coming in from behind from the get-go in that game and just really had to push numbers forward, weren't really getting any bounces or maybe many calls, I guess, either. And then to come through, man, Mauro Diaz was
fantastic.
I have such a hard time evaluating him because he brings nothing on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. He loses the ball too much, but he has just moments of brilliance, like especially on set pieces. The balls that he'd swing in, he led to two goals in a very, you know, short amount of time. And it looked like Dallas was going to come through late. And it was just a really entertaining last 10 minutes. The first, you know, 60, 70 minutes to me weren't really that exciting. But
especially once Portland had scored. But that almost seemed to wake up Dallas to that their task was that much harder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how about that goal from Milano at the end of the game, though?
Yeah, I don't know. That was, I think, a little too much was made of that. It was a lot of poise.
Come on!
I think so.
Kid subs in.
Yeah, a fresh kid coming off the bench. He loses one defender. Jesse Gonzalez commits. He tucks it by him. The finish was really nice.
Yeah.
But getting into the position, I don't think it was really that special.
On a goaltender hockey right there. Yeah. A goalkeeper playing as well as anybody around, really. I mean, that he is being talked of for an MLS keeper at age 20 to be getting whispers of an L-Tree call-up from Mexico is pretty impressive to me. Let's jump over to that other game, Columbus and Red Bulls, which was not exciting.
No.
They wanted to tell you it was.
Not till the end.
At the end, of course, once the Red Bulls had broken through. And there was a fight, and there was a televised middle finger from Kai Kamara, which was super interesting.
Well, that laser pointer, there's the green laser pointer and a red laser pointer at different times.
It's Christmas, Ben. They're just Christmas lights.
Oh, I appreciate being seasonal, but couldn't they at least wait an hour and a half?
So without just completely brushing over that game, I'm going to completely brush over that game. Who do you have?
Ooh, you're going to completely brush over that game. Yeah. Well, I can still touch on that game. While answering your question. I don't think Columbus is the team to beat. I wouldn't be surprised if Columbus won by two goals in regulation. I think the team may not get along very well, personally. It seems like especially when the Tony Chani freakout moment happened and Kai Kamara yesterday comes over, starts screaming at Tony Chani. Tony Chani just ignores him for the first like 30 seconds of this very weird melee.
Mm-hmm.
It just does not seem like the Columbus crew get along very much at all. And I don't know if Greg Berhalter...
I think he's a little feisty as it is, and maybe it's there's a sort of organized chaos there, which probably mm-hmm. doesn't provide a whole lot of solace moving forward for them, because how long do those coaches last when they're just kind of organizing chaos?
Yeah.
But I like them a lot in talent. I think they have literally three or four players who can just take over a game. When Finley is on and not frittering away possession or getting too excited with the ball, and he's still a young kid, he's dynamite. He was just named to MLS Best 11. Kamara, incredible story to come back and finish as well as he have. And I think you mentioned them. I love Chani.
You love Chani? I like Will Trapp more than Chani. But.
Yeah, I think Chani is a player in MLS that you can build your team around because he's got a little bit of a more physically gifted Dax McCarty.
Yeah.
And those sort of players, and we saw it with Nagbe for a while, although he's having more success being advanced with Portland, that I really like in the mix. I do like Columbus here. That said, Portland's going to travel well. Caleb Porter knows how to play the everybody's against us card. I do think that eventually it's going to be Portland's defense that lets it down. Its defending is going to let itself down.
And center backs especially.
Oh, yeah, especially Paparotto. I don't know if I'm saying his name right.
No,
but
you're right. Yeah.
Norberto. Norbert Pappas. I think he leaves a lot to be desired. And I think Liam Ridgewell gets a lot more credit than he deserves just because he's got his man bun and he comes from England. That's something we see here, that where the accent kind of takes over and you think, well, he played at Birmingham. You know, okay.
How much do you think it matters, Fernando Adi's health?
I wouldn't have told you it mattered a month ago, but he's really impressed me in the last month in terms of using his body, in terms of hold-up play. And I think that can be big against a pretty patient Columbus backline. Parkhurst has been pretty solid. They're not going to be really phased by
Gaston
much.
Sarro, one of my favorite players to watch, because you never know when he just might become totally unhinged.
Yeah.
He's right on the cusp of a yellow, and if he gets a yellow, he's right on the cusp of a red, because he's not going to change how he plays.
Their whole team has that, really, outside of Steve Clark. No, I mean, pick a guy, and Parkhurst. Parkhurst,
Trapp,
yeah. They're well in control. Columbus has done a really good job of drafting as well. You can count on the fact that they're going to have enough talent to get the job done. It'd be really interesting moving forward. And I believe they're still a team. You know, we go this whole time without mentioning Higuain, who just with his tiny socks and his little bald head.
He was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
When aren't the wheels supposed to be off a player like that by now?
Him and Valeri.
I think.
And it's cool, the Argentinian, you know, the storyline that goes along with it, right? Higuain and Valeri. Like, that's... Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they're both Argentinian.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah, and it's
there's a big factor that I think that I don't know if it's just that they're the high profile players, but I think once you get past American, Canadian, and Mexicans, it's got to be between English and Argentine for the most players in MLS, I would think, or at least the most who feature. I like Columbus in the game as well, but there's just something about this Portland team that is defying. They weren't in the playoffs. They weren't in the playoffs with two games to go this year. Midway through the season, they were well off the pace, and Porter's job was in question, to the point where I thought if they blew the game yesterday, given Porter's combustible personality, is there a chance that Portland uses that as an excuse to move in a different direction? So I think this game, it's a little bit of an all-bets-are-off game. There'll be more pressure on Columbus being at home. Mm. It'll be about the hunger, and I think this is one of those few games where motivational tactics can honestly play a part. Those things get overblown. Who's watching what video? Who's getting what kind of speech? But there is a sort of why not us mentality to the Timbers right now, whereas I think the crew can go into this game feeling like we should win this game.
Yeah.
We're at home. Portland's coming all the way across the country. We've got guys who have done this dance before, and we've got a little bit of that youthful naivete as well. So
that's something that Liam Callahan mentioned, right? If you're really confident, sometimes you can come out flat.
Yeah.
And that's an obvious worry, I think, heading into the Boston College game, because that's what happened to Syracuse when the last time they played Boston College. Well, the same thing applies to the Columbus Crew against the Timbers. You know, I mean,
My prediction, I'm probably not qualified to make any predictions because I did expect this to be Vancouver. I expected an all-Canadian final.
You were a big Vancouver guy, I remember.
Yeah, well, I love Kendall Waston. I think that I let that color my vision a little bit, and Laba as well. But I expected Vancouver to come out, and I thought whoever won that Toronto-Montreal first series would make it happen. But Michael Bradley's had a tremendous drop-off. It's been very disappointing, and it pains me to say that because it's one of my favorite players of all time to watch, especially with the American bent. Just incredibly disappointing season for him.
There's two guys that I don't really understand the fascination with, one on both of these championship contenders. Harrison Offal on the Columbus Crew and Diego Chara on the Portland Timbers.
I'm with you on both these.
Are you? Okay, yeah. Because listening to the announcers, you'd think that Diego Chara is the new Claudio Makélélé with a little bit more of an edge, you know, the guy who breaks everything up.
I think we fall a little bit of victim here. And I love his enthusiasm, and I think it's great for the game overall and for MLS overall. Should fall a little bit of victim to Taylor Twellman, who loves to yell. Yeah. He is fired up in a game. Unbelievable tackle. And what I love about Twellman, and I really do like him, is he'll go for a solid, say, 30 seconds telling you what a great tackle somebody made, and you'll be thinking, wow, that winger made an awful play, like allowed the defender to get back into play, and then at the end he'll be like, "And by the way, really bad play by the winger." Like so he's got that sort of MLS support ramped up, and then he's like, "But don't you think I didn't notice how poor of a play that was by so
and
so?"
And then out of the blue, he'll also eviscerate somebody.
Oh yeah,
and it's almost uncomfortable to listen to.
It has to be better. You have to get onto the end of that in these situations. He's so much emphasis.
If he had a Madden rating for passion, he'd be a 95. How accurate that how accurate that passion is, I don't know. Sometimes
if he had
a
Madden rating like myself for interest in concussion awareness, it would be 157. So let's get quick before we hit the end of the show. And our producer Derek has told us we had a little bit of time left. Let's pick those Elite Eight games in the NCAA top of our head. Boston College and Syracuse. I don't think any of us, given the interview and the connection to Buffalo, is going to pick Boston College. But what's your danger fear for Syracuse, as you just mentioned?
I would just say complacency. And I don't see why they would be complacent now, though. You know, so maybe I just take back entirely what I just said, because they are going to be hungry playing against Boston College. So I think Syracuse is actually in a good position, despite winning the ACC tournament and beating Dartmouth and then Seattle. I think they still have a little bit of revenge to get back against Boston College.
And we both have cues there. Maryland-Clemson will face the winner. Maryland, the 10 seed. Clemson, the 2. Any leanings either way there?
Clemson playing an ACC schedule, another thing that Liam Callahan said, makes a huge difference. They've played championship-caliber games all year long, you know, so this is not going to be a huge deal for Clemson, whereas I don't know if Maryland will be able to adjust.
They might not. They do have the chance. They do have an incredible player in Corbeau's, who I think – you always have that game breaker. We saw it with UB. If you have that one guy who can do it, it's danger. But I too would pick Clemson. Akron, by the way, and Creighton can go both high five the bracket makers, because one of them is going to the Final Four.
Oh, the old 5-12.
It's 4-12. 4-12.
Yeah, okay. No,
but Creighton beat North Carolina, and you kind of look back to Creighton's path. They had Drake knock off a very good Kentucky team. And so they get Drake, who probably were a little over the moon at that point.
Yep.
And then they beat North Carolina, who just couldn't find a goal. Akron has to beat a Rutgers team coming off a pretty disappointing Big Ten this year. And then SMU, who was, I don't want to call them a happy to be their team, but they were happy to be there.
Did you see the Akron stats? Akron had 40 shots.
Yeah.
40 shots. It's wild.
I think it's the old immovable object thing there, because Creighton's defense is very strong.
What about Fabian Hervers too?
Fantastic player.
Fantastic
the German
player.
Sensation.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pick against Akron because I want to. So I hope Azanis scores 3 goals as a sub, but Creighton wins 4-3. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair
You're
enough.
Picking Akron, I'd assume.
You know, I want to pick Creighton because I'm surprised that they were a 12 seed. But no, I think Akron's gonna win.
All right, 30 seconds here. Wake Forest and Stanford, the 1 seed Demon Deacons, the 8 seed Stanford. I'll tell you this, I'm picking the Deacs even against Jordan Morris, because I think as early as the second or third week of the season, when Wake Forest played a very difficult schedule and was a little too far down, if you watch them play, you realize they're one of the best teams I've seen maybe ever in college soccer.
Go watch a highlight video of Jack Harrison,
fantastic
freshman. He is an unbelievable player.
Yeah, and Farrell, the goalkeeper, and Ian Harks, and it's a... It's a very good team. So we're all we're basically pegging the same thing here. Wake, I got Creighton. You have Akron.
We agree way too much, I think. Yeah. But that's the only one where we differ.
Well, we'll have to differ in style. We'll catch up next week with a lot to discuss. I'll be back from San Diego in the AGM. We'll have the MLS Cup over, another weekend of European soccer, and we'll have a Final Four ready, or the College Cup, excuse me. Sorry, NCAA on WBNY.